We're going to be in Luke chapter 14 this morning. If you want to open your apps or your Bibles to that passage. Now, have you ever noticed how two people can be looking at the exact same thing, yet see something completely different? I've got some optical illusions here that illustrate this fact. You may have seen some of these before. Go ahead and bring up that first one again there. Now, on this one, is the red dot in the near corner or the far corner? How many of you say the near corner? How many of you say the far corner? All right. See the same thing, but you see two different things. The next one. Some people see in this one a vase. Some people see two faces looking at each other. The next one's kind of one of the more famous of these. But in this one, you see either an old woman or a young lady. How many see the young woman? How many see the old lady? And usually one of them immediately jumps out at you, and some people have a real hard time even seeing the other one. But they're both there. And then this classic from just a couple of years ago that erupted fights all over the internet. The dress. Is it blue and black or white and gold? And you online, you know, the arguments would go on. You just keep scrolling down and down and down. It's black and blue, you idiot. No, it's white and gold. I don't know if this means anything, but the actual dress itself was blue and black. Nobody kill me after church. Because depending on when I look at it, Terry, I've seen both. But the same thing happens in everyday life in how we see people. We can see the exact same person in the exact same situation and yet see something completely different. A few weeks ago, we were sitting in Bible study and Roy and Carmen shared a story about something that happened to them that I think illustrates this perfectly. And I asked if they would come up and share this story with you. So Roy and Carmen. You going first, Roy?
I guess.
Okay.
And I'll be probably not one of my most proud moments, and I'm not very good at reading people, but Carmen's total opposite. She can figure you out, so beware of that. We were at a restaurant, and things weren't going so well. The service was pretty lousy. The waitress was slow. I thought she was rude. And Carmen all of a sudden at the end said, I think we need to leave her an extra large tip. And I said, do what? I said, that was horrible. I mean, everything was bad. So all I saw was this lady that was not doing her job very well, and I thought she was rude and cranky, and so I'll let you, Carmen, tell you what she saw.
Well, whenever I was looking at the situation, I just felt sorry for her. Like I had said to him, you don't know what kind of day she's had. She may have just had a really rotten day. And anyway, he let me go ahead, and I wrote a note, like on a napkin or something, and we left a larger tip than we typically would give. And then we go up to pay. And when we get to the counter, that we had to wait for a minute, there was nobody there. When in comes the same lady, she came up to, and she said, I am so sorry. She said, we have been swamped, and two people called in sick. She was the only one working the floor. She was doing waiting the tables and doing the money. And we just had a little bit of a conversation about that, and she hadn't been to the table yet, where I had left the note and the money. So we weren't aware of all the background. So anyway, as we left, we walked out the door, and he looked at me, and he's like, how did you know that she just needed that? So it was one of those things. When she went back to the table, hopefully she was pleasantly surprised, and maybe it made her day a little bit better, but she got off to a really rough start that morning. So we just saw it differently.
Thank you. One of the things that set Jesus apart from everyone around him, that enabled him to change so many lives, wasn't just that he had supernatural understanding and insight into people. It wasn't just that he had the power to perform miracles, but that it was he saw people differently. He saw with a healing love. He saw people in their lives and their situations differently from everyone else. And this allowed him to engage with them in a way that could transform their lives. Now, you heard Roy and Carmen's story. Now I want you to hear another story. This one comes from Luke chapter 14, beginning with verse 1. One Sabbath, when he went to dine at the house of a ruler of the Pharisees, they were watching him carefully. And behold, there was a man before him who had dropsy. And Jesus responded to the lawyers and the Pharisees, saying, "Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath or not?" But they remained silent. Then he took him and healed him and sent him away. But he said to them, "Which of you, having a son or an ox that has fallen into a well on a Sabbath day, will not immediately pull him out?" And they could not reply to these things. So the setting here is dinner at the house of a Pharisee. And so you've got Pharisees there that the passage also tells us there were teachers of the law or lawyers there, religious lawyers. So you know right away when you have multiple lawyers present, there's going to be problems. You've got the disciples there and Jesus. But in addition to this cast of characters is somebody else. A man sick with what the text calls dropsy. Some ancient versions call it gathering waters. The NIV calls it abnormal swelling. His modern medical diagnosis would likely be some sort of edema, which is the accumulation of fluid in various tissues of the body. It can have different causes, and it can be extremely painful. What's a bit of a mystery is what this man is doing here in the home of one of the rulers of the Pharisees. Now, maybe Jesus invited him. Maybe he came with Jesus. We already know that Jesus would welcome anyone to his table. Sinner or Pharisee alike, it didn't matter to Jesus. And so maybe he was able to kind of sneak in the door with Jesus, you know, and the Pharisees didn't like it, but hey, you know, we want to eat with Jesus, so, you know, we got to let it go. What we do know is that this is not the kind of man that the Pharisees would normally invite to dinner. You see, from their theological perspective, if you had a disease, it was because you had done something to deserve it. God was punishing you for some sort of unworthiness in your life. And so they would have seen this and they would have judged this man unworthy. And he's not the kind of guy they would want to be associated with. It's also the Sabbath day, the day that they are to remember and to keep holy. It was today to be a day of worship and rest. In fact, the word Sabbath means rest. Now, the Pharisees had developed an extensive list of rules in regards to how to observe the Sabbath. They weren't supposed to work, and so they had to define, well, what is work and what isn't work. Now, their desire to honor the Sabbath, that's good. The problem is that they valued their own rules over relationships, their traditions over truth. And they put saving face over saving people. And their rules were burdensome and unyielding, and they missed the point of the Sabbath rest entirely. I'll give you just a couple of examples of this. One rule of the Sabbath was that you could spit on the Sabbath. That's okay. But when you do spit, make sure you spit on a rock or in some grass, because one of the rules was that if you spit on the Sabbath, you cannot spit in the dirt. Because if you spit in the dirt, the spit might mix with the dirt and make mud. And since you make bricks out of mud, that constitutes work. All right? Beginning to see how the wheels turn in their brains? Now, here's another one. In the Ten Commandments, when it gives the Sabbath rule, one of the things it says is that you are not to travel on the Sabbath. You are to stay at home so you can focus on worship and rest. Well, what constitutes travel? there has to be some sort of distance attached to this, right? So they had figured it out. Anything more than 2,000 cubits is traveling. It's a journey. And a cubit's like a foot and a half. So, you know, that gives you kind of an idea. You do the math on this, you're talking a little more than a half a mile here. You can travel on the Sabbath day. But that wasn't the end of it. You could have a temporary home on the Sabbath day. So here's what would happen. It's Friday, day before the Sabbath, and here's my house. So what I would do is I would travel just shy of 1,500 or 2,000 cubits, about a half a mile from my house, and there's a tree here. And I would leave a little stockpile of food, a granola bar, some nuts and raisins and a water bottle, okay? I leave that little stockpile of food, I say the proper words here, and this tree then becomes a temporary home. Now you see what's going on here? Sabbath day comes, I can only travel 2,000 cubits from my house, my home. But this is my home and so is that. So I can walk my half a mile to here, and my 2,000 cubits starts from here, not there. And so they would do this on a Friday, and they might have two, three, four of these temporary homes set up. So in reality, they could go as far as they wanted on the Sabbath day. You think they maybe had missed the point of Sabbath day entirely? And yet they're patting themselves on the back about how good they are at observing God's law. Now, those are just a couple of examples. Late in the first century, all of these teachings and traditions were gathered up into written form into what is called the Mishnah. And 24 chapters are devoted to Sabbath rules. So what took God 8 verses to communicate in the Ten Commandments, they turn into a freaking book. You talked about petty and tedious. These rules didn't put the focus on the goodness of God. It put the focus on how good they were at following rules. And these rules, this rule following, became the litmus test by which they judged everyone. And Jesus is running headfirst into these rules. Look at the end of the first verse. It says, they were watching him carefully. They weren't watching to learn from him. They weren't watching to learn from his example. You know why they were watching him, don't you? They were scrutinizing him, hoping he would mess up. Hoping he would break one of those rules and they could embarrass him, they could discredit him. But Jesus didn't care for their stupid rules. He didn't care for their traditions, especially when it got in the way of loving people. Here was this man who needed healing love, and Jesus wasn't going to let their traditions get in the way of what he needed. And so Jesus turns their whole test against them. He asks them, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath or not? In those 24 chapters of all those Sabbath rules, is there anything in there at all that will allow you to help a hurting person? Now, Jesus already knows they will permit themselves to render aid as long as it serves their own interests. Verse 5, which of you, having a son or an ox that has fallen into a well on the Sabbath day, will not immediately pull him out? So if it's your kid, or your ox that falls into a well, nope, can't do it, can't help, it violates the Sabbath rule. But if it's his own kid or his own ox, well, by all means, help him out. There's something wrong with rules that allow you to help yourself, but not help others. Do we have any rules like that? Jesus made God's opinion quite clear when he heals the man in verse 4. Now, you and I, we can't perform miracles like Jesus did, and we may not be able to heal people physically like Jesus did, but we can love them with the same healing love. And if we're going to love like Jesus, then we need to love people with a healing love. And the question that we've been asking throughout the series is, what does love look like? What does love do? And so here we ask, what does healing love look like? What does healing love do? Well, the first thing is this. Healing love sees others. And if you've been paying attention in this series, I have made this same point in a couple of other sermons. I repeat this because it's important. I repeat it because Jesus sees people differently. When others look at a person and they see a problem, healing love sees a person. And the other people in that room, they may have looked at this man and they just saw his edema. They saw his illness, but they didn't see the person behind the illness. And I'll tell you what I think the Pharisees saw. I think they saw him as a prop. And I said before, we don't know why he was there. Did he come with Jesus or did the Pharisees invite him? Either way, I think they saw him as a tool that they could use to try to trap Jesus. And if you'll permit me to read between the lines, here's what I see. I see the Pharisees watching Jesus carefully, looking for any misstep he might make. I think they knew Jesus' reputation. They knew what Jesus had done with sick people on the Sabbath before. He ignored all their rules and he helped them. And so they were watching to see if they would do it again. And I think that man was there as a prop. They wouldn't have wanted him there unless it served their own interests. But Jesus didn't look at the man's illness and ask what he did to deserve it. He didn't worry about navigating their rules concerning the Sabbath. He wasn't concerned about satisfying their political interests. He simply saw a man who needed healing love, and so he showed it. What do we do when we see someone in need? What do you do when you see someone hurting and someone who needs help? Who do you see? And that's a key question. Do you see a who or a what? And Roy and Carmen, I thank you guys for sharing your story, and Roy especially, because you kind of came out as the goober in that story. But I'm right there with you, dude. All right, I've been there. In that situation, Roy saw a what? He saw bad service. He saw a rude waitress. He saw that he didn't get what he wanted. We shouldn't leave her a tip. But Carmen was able to transcend that in that moment, and she saw a who? Here's a woman who's having a bad day. Here's a woman who needs some encouragement. Maybe we could give that. They saw two different things. One saw what, one saw who. And when you look at someone in need, and whether you see a what or a who will make all of the difference in what you do. And when we learn to see others with the eyes of Jesus, we will see them with the healing love. We'll not merely see where they've been or what they've done, but we will see who they are. And think of what Jesus saw when he saw others. Mark Labberton has written a book called The Dangerous Act of Loving Your Neighbor. I love that title. The Dangerous Act of Loving Your Neighbor. He says this: Jesus didn't see a sick woman. He saw a daughter of God. He didn't see an outcast from society. He saw a child of Israel. He didn't see a sinner. He saw a person in the image of the Creator. And here Jesus doesn't see a man with an edema. He sees a man who has been invited to the great banquet of God. Let me explain. Immediately after this healing, Jesus goes on to tell two parables, two stories. And I wish we had time to go through both of them this morning. We don't. But let me encourage you to sometime this week read these two parables, because they're connected to this story. Jesus tells them because he's trying to explain to them what he was trying to accomplish in this healing. The first parable we find in verses 7 through 11. And it's about a wedding feast. And in this story, the person sitting at the worst seat at the wedding is invited by the host. "Friend, move up higher," he says. And this friend goes from sitting at the kid table, if you will, to being the guest of honor. The second parable from verses 12 to 24 is about a banquet. And the invitations are sent out, but people are too busy, they're too preoccupied. And so the invitations then go out to the poor, the crippled, the blind, and the lame. And to everyone that everyone else ignores, they are given a very special invitation in verse 17. "Come, for everything is now ready. The banquet is set. Dinner is served. Come." If you're here this morning and you are in need of healing love, let me talk to you for just a minute. Maybe you've spent a good chunk of your life being seen as a what and not a who. People look at you and maybe they see a failure. Maybe they see unfulfilled potential. Perhaps they look at you and they see an ailment or a disability. They see a shortcoming of some sort. Maybe they see mistakes or foolish choices. Or maybe they see the abuse and neglect of others. But do you know what Jesus sees when he looks at you? He sees an honored guest. And he says to you, "Friend, move up higher. I've saved the best seat for you. You are my guest of honor. Come, for everything is now ready." That's what Jesus sees. That's how healing love sees people. And that's how we need to see people. Because a healing love sees people. Secondly, a healing love speaks. A healing love speaks up even when everyone remains silent. I love how Jesus takes this room full of people who love the sound of their own voice. This room full of people who think their opinions are the very thoughts of God. And he renders them silent. And I love how Jesus turns the tables here. You see, the Pharisees are always asking Jesus questions to test him, to trick him, to trap him in his words. But now Jesus is the one that asks them a question they can't answer. Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath or not? And verse 4 says, they remained silent. Couldn't answer. Verse 6, they could not reply to these things. Not a one of them says, "You're right. Maybe we should do what we can to help this man." Not a one of them says, "Hey, you know, Jesus, you've healed so many other people. Could you heal this man?" No. You know, there are places that we are supposed to be silent. The library. A museum. I can hear my own footsteps right in my head right now, walking through the marble floors of a museum. Weddings, the hunters will tell you, in the tree stand or a duck blind, not a place for a chatty Cathy there. During a test, shh. In a courtroom, now don't be cracking jokes in court. That'll get you in trouble real quick. In the bathroom, now ladies, you all go to the bathroom as a group. And so, us guys, we just assume you're talking about us. We know you're talking in there. We assume you're talking about us. But let me tell you what it's like in the boys' room. Because there's an unwritten rule. When you're a guy, and you're using the bathroom, and you're standing before the urinal, You don't talk to the guy next to you. Eyes ahead, mouth shut. Because we don't get a whole stall. We get these little dividers that don't really hide anything if we even get that. So it's not until you've turned around and you're zipped up and you're going to the sink, then you can talk. Otherwise, it's quiet. Now, if the guy zips up and goes straight for the door and not the sink, don't talk to him. And whatever you do, don't shake his hand. There's another place we're told to be silent. And that's in church. You know how many times I got shhed growing up? Be quiet. This is God's house. I didn't know God's ears were so sensitive. And there are times to be silent and there are times to be noisy in a worship service. I get that. But when it comes to the people of God, it is time for us to be silent no more. We need to speak up. We need to speak up for love. We need to speak up for those who have no voice or who have no one to speak up for them. We need to speak up for the hurting, the lonely, the neglected, and the forgotten. And when we see others with the healing love of Jesus, we have to speak up, even if everyone else remains silent. Thirdly, healing love doesn't just see others. It doesn't just speak up, but healing love acts courageously. It isn't enough just to say something. Healing love does something. You know, too often we promise prayers never prayed, and we offer blessings and sympathy, but do we do anything? Now, please don't misunderstand me here. I'm not saying that praying for someone is doing nothing. No. Prayer is powerful. And sometimes prayer is the most powerful thing we can do. James 5:16 says the prayer of a righteous person has great power as it is working. Doing nothing is when we say we will pray for someone, but then we don't. And I think too often as Christians, we use this promise to pray. You know, I'll pray for you. I'll keep you in my prayers. And we use that as sort of a Christian version of wishing somebody well. You know, well, I wish you well. Hope everything goes fine. I'll pray for you. But do we really? If we promise to do it and don't do it, they're empty words. And I know how it is. We're busy. We get distracted. And we forget. I've been there. I've had those moments on a Sunday morning where somebody walks into church and I see them and I think, oh, crud. I told them last week I would pray for them. And so I quickly run my mind backwards through the previous week. Did I pray for them? And then I have a second realization. What was it they needed prayer for? Surgery? Somebody sick? What was it? I can't remember. And then I think, I'll just say a quick prayer for them right now. Dear Lord, please be with them and whatever it was that they needed, you know. Then you go up, shake hands. Good morning, it's good to see you. You know, I've been praying for you. Do you know what's even more powerful than praying for someone? Praying with someone. So maybe instead of just wishing them well and saying that you'll be in their prayers, maybe you say, hey, can I have a word of prayer with you right now? Hey, let's just step into the other room here where it's quiet and let's talk to God for a moment. And I was thinking about this as I was working on the sermon this week, and I had this vision. Not like God talking to me sort of vision, just my mind running away with me sort of vision. But I think this is pretty cool. Wouldn't it be awesome if here at Sunrise Christian Church, more prayer was happening before and after service than during? Think about that for a moment. That so many people, you know, you run into each other. You haven't seen each other since last week. How's it going? Well, it's been a long week. And, you know, you share those moments. Well, hey, let's pray about that. Let's talk to God. And we had so many people praying with each other right here together that there was more prayer happening before a worship service or after a worship service. Because we are acting on what we see. Two believers coming together in the presence of God. That's powerful stuff. And then once we have prayed for someone, once we have prayed with someone, then we need to explore this question. How might God use us to be a part of the answer? Ever think about that? That you might be part of the answer to your own prayer? How might I be a part of the life change that needs to happen here? And this is where the healing part of healing love comes in. Because healing involves repairing something, making something better, enabling someone to do something they couldn't do before. That's healing. And we can all be a part of God's healing in someone's life. I've already picked on Roy and Carmen this morning, so I'll just keep picking on Carmen once again. But it's all good, Carmen. And I didn't ask her permission for this one. But we've got a boy in the church who's really struggled with reading. And Carmen has taken several months to spend time with this boy and tutor this boy. And I heard a very happy mommy this week said, "My boy tested at grade level." That's awesome. That's healing love. And it's something that we all can do, each in our own way. We can be a part of God's healing hand to touch another life. And healing love doesn't just act. It acts courageously regardless of what others think. Jesus was outnumbered in this house. He was surrounded by Pharisees and religious lawyers. He was on enemy turf. This wasn't like being in the home of Mary and Martha, who were really close friends. No, these were people who were hoping to see Jesus faceplant. But he loved anyway. He acted courageously. And remember this, these people all thought they had good reasons, spiritual reasons, for not helping this man. But they weren't reasons at all. They were excuses. Whatever reasons we think we have for not showing compassion, even when they sound spiritual, they're not reasons at all. Just excuses. Sometimes the most courageous thing we can do is to love someone else. You see, love not only confronts the enemy in the world, but love confronts the enemy in our own hearts. Our own complacency, our own laziness, our own self-righteousness, our own judgmentalism, well, they just deserve it. It's their own fault. Jesus sees, Jesus speaks, and Jesus saves. We need to see, we need to speak, and we need to save. And no, we can't save like Jesus does. But whenever we act in love, we are reenacting the salvation of Jesus in our own little way. For some of you here this morning, your response to this sermon is going to be when you go out those doors and you go to school this week, you go to work, you go home, you go to your various places that you go to, your clubs, whatever, that you're going to see others differently. You're going to see what Jesus sees even when everybody else sees something different. You're going to see a who, not a what. For some of you, your response to this sermon is going to be when you go out through those doors today, you're going to have some time this week you need to speak up. You need to be a voice for someone, even when others are remaining silent. And for others of you this week, your response is going to be to act courageously. to do the loving thing even when everybody else is sitting on their hands. Maybe you'll even have the opportunity to do all three. To see someone, to speak up, to act courageously. And if you're here this morning and you need God's healing love, I want you to know that healing love is still available. It is just as plentiful right now today as it was for this man with edema 2,000 years ago. And Jesus offers you the same love. He still invites you to be His guest of honor, to sit at His table. And of course, you study the Bible, you'll realize that that banquet and feast imagery is a picture of heaven. It's a picture of eternity with our Lord. We get pictures in the book of Revelation. Jesus comes back. We all go to the marriage supper of the Lamb. And we all sit down at this great banquet together in the new Jerusalem. It's a beautiful picture of eternity. And you've been invited. Come, sit, be the guest of honor. That offer still remains. If you need the healing love of Jesus today, you need to know Jesus as your Lord and Savior. When we sing this song, "I'm going to be through those doors, come and talk to me." If you're looking for a church home and you would like Sunrise to be your church home, come talk to me. Let us stand as we sing this.